Welcome to another interview provided by WishlistProducts.com. In this interview, we speak to Lisa Barnes, an award-winning author and producer of many, many virtual events. What's a virtual event, you say? Well, that's exactly what we talked to Lisa about in this interview, and specifically, we drilled down into how she creates these events and how specifically she uses Wishlist Member to manage the event and deliver the content. We talked to her about how she prices these events and why she uses a three-tiered pricing structure in order to maximize registration. We also talked to her a lot about what happens after these virtual events and the importance of keeping community strong and ongoing. If you are looking to develop or produce any type of virtual event, this is exactly the type of interview you want to listen to. We go all the way back to the very beginning when Lisa first started producing virtual events to the point now where she is doing this on a regular basis, not only for herself, but for many of her clients as well. So sit back, relax, grab a pen and paper because there is a lot of juicy and meaty information shared in this interview that's guaranteed to help you when it comes to producing your next virtual event and certainly using Wishlist Member to help facilitate and control the content that is delivered to your paying members. Here we go. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stu McLaren, co-founder of Wishlist Products and the membership plugin called Wishlist Member. Joining me here today is Lisa Barnes, who is one of our customers who not only creates her own membership sites, but is out there creating membership sites for many of her clients as well. Today, we're going to dive in deep. We're going to find out exactly what type of membership sites she is creating, how she's doing it, and what tips and tricks she has for all of us who would wish to do the exact same thing. So with that, Lisa, welcome to today's call.
Thank you, Stu. I'm excited.
Me too. Now, you and I have been playing phone tag, trying to connect, because you have got a whole wide variety of different ways that you are using Wishlist Member. I definitely want to get to that. I want to talk to you about what you're doing and how you're doing it. But first, can you give everybody a little bit of background about yourself, your business, and what it is that you do?
Yeah, for sure. I call myself a virtual event manager, and what I do is I produce virtual events for others. So virtual events such as telesummits and virtual summits, any sort of event that features many different speakers over multiple days delivered either over the phone or online. And I got into this back in 2001 was the year when I was forced into training my colleagues after an acquisition and training my colleagues who are new to the company what I was doing as a project manager and how they could do it too. Plus, there was a ban on intercompany travel. So I had to kind of quickly look around and ask myself, okay, what tools can I use to train my colleagues virtually without having to travel? And that's when I started using virtual events for training. And once I formed my own business in 2005, then I started using virtual events again, not only for training, but also to make money. So it's been an almost 10-year journey. 2011
wow.
will be 10 years.
Now, so I want to talk to you about that because one of the interesting things that you said right out of the gate was that you wanted to do it virtually. Why was that important for you with this particular company?
Well, when we were acquired, I went from a workforce of 200 people in downtown Toronto to a workforce of 30,000 worldwide.
Wow.
And once we were acquired, I'll never forget, we had stock options at the startup that I had worked for of 200 employees. And our stock options were bought up by the acquiring company, but they were devalued. So I had 3,000 stock options valued at about $200 each that were devalued by, or undervalued, I don't know what the term is, but it went to $8. Per share. And that just shows you that the company that acquired us at just the time when their stock prices started declining. And part of it was part of the dot-com bust, because this is a company that built large servers for big companies, those who needed to share terabytes of information. So when we were acquired at just at that point when the company started doing very poorly on the stock exchange. And so thus they started cutting spending. And one of the things that start to go is training and travel. Two T's.
Gotcha.
Two things that companies usually cut. And so just at that point, it was, you know, company was going down, stock prices were going down, and they challenged us with finding unique ways in staying in touch with our colleagues around the world without having to travel to see them.
Got it. So obviously training virtually became important. And you said you then gravitated towards teleseminars. Was that your first real tool or platform, if you will, for these types of virtual trainings?
Yes, it was. And I was doing monthly teleseminars. And going from a company where I used teleseminars and virtual events for training and then now trying to transition to using them to make money was a hard transition for me. I had to change my mindset. Because here I was working for a company where I didn't have to use it to acquire wealth. And then switching gears to now being self-employed, where I had to think like not only a marketer, but a seller as well, and a trainer. So three different mindsets.
So let's talk about that because, you know, certainly making a transition from, you know, you're working for a fairly big company, you're training people worldwide, to now using that same skill set and transferring it into your own business where you are actually making money through the same medium. What was your mindset at that point, and what really kick-started you to make the leap and make the jump and become your own entrepreneur, if you will?
Yeah, I was. I remember the day I got laid off, and this was my reward for being innovative. So I helped the company save about $5 million in training costs using the virtual method. And then a year later, I even got an award for doing that. And then a year later, I was laid off, so that was my gift for innovation in the company. But as I sit there, I said to myself, I could easily go and find a new job, or I could start my own business. And I loved the idea of working from home. The large company I had worked for had started to let go a lot of their real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So they started looking at different offices around the world and encouraging those offices that had not a lot of employees working in the office, started encouraging us to work from home. So I had about 2 years experience working from home with a large corporation. So that transition of working from home for myself was easy, and I wanted to maintain that. So hence the reason why I started my own business and looked at the virtual option, because it allowed me to stay at home, work from home, as I had done with a larger corporation.
Gotcha. Okay, so I definitely see how you were able to easily gravitate from, you know, one to the other. But let me ask you, at that point, you're wanting to start your own business. You like the idea of working virtually from home. Where did the seed for your current business really, get placed? Where did it blossom from? How did you know that you wanted to, you know, eventually create virtual events and provide those services to others?
All right, so this is how it happened. So I was hosting monthly expert interviews at that point. And I was using basic HTML pages, password protecting them, to be able to deliver the recordings. So every month I'd host an expert. People would pay $19 to access the series, the interview. And then after that, I would sell the recording either on CD or as a download. But it was quite difficult because at the time I didn't know about fulfillment, house-based fulfillment services.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them existed back in 2005. And so I was burning CDs at home. And when it came to delivering the online content, I wasn't blogging at that point. I'd stopped blogging, and so I was trying to build HTML pages, password protect them. My income.
I was just going to say, you were doing it old school.
Old school.
Yeah.
Yes. Version 0.0. And my income wasn't growing. I was making a steady, you know, hundreds of dollars were coming in, but not enough to sustain my lifestyle. And so by 2006, I'd climbed to $50,000 in debt. I was looking at my business. I was like, why isn't this working? I'm doing the monthly teleseminars. I'm using my experience managing virtual events, but I'm not generating a lot of money. Why? You know, why? What's happening? And so that's when I started to look at more telesummits after attending my very first one that year. I started looking at grouping a series of teleseminars together, featuring a lot of experts in a concentrated period of time. And that's when my income started to skyrocket.
So let me stay right here for a second because I want to talk to you about a couple things. One, you mentioned that you were interviewing experts. What were they experts on?
They were experts in marketing, business. At the time, I was calling myself the empowerment diva. And so I was trying to encourage women to create the life they deserve.
Gotcha.
So the people that I was interviewing were were people that were providing advice on careers and business and marketing. So very fluffy, very general business information. And frankly, it wasn't getting me anywhere. I mean, I was getting great interviews and interviewing great people. But in terms of my income, it was falling flat.
Gotcha. So you were – but the market you were going after were business owners, particularly women by the sounds of it. Am I right on that?
Yes, okay. Exactly.
And so the original idea was interview experts in these areas, provide those interviews for $19, and people could listen in live. Is that right?
Yes, listen live and then get access to the recording.
Okay, gotcha. And then you would look to turn those into CD products of which you could then sell after that particular event.
That's
as well.
Right.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay, and then from there, you realized this isn't making the kind of money that I need it to make, and you participated in a telesummit, and the light bulb went on and said, you know what, this is it, where at this point you get a whole bunch of experts together for a concentrated period of time. You interviewed them, provide them for a certain, you know, whether 1 week or 2 weeks or whatever the time frame is, and you're able to charge more money, I'm going to take it?
Yes, exactly. Now, the mechanics of managing a telesummit were difficult before I discovered Wishlist Member. Now, the telesummit I had attended, the very first one, was in 2006. It was hosted by a woman by the name of Milana Leshinsky. And it was called the Coaching Telesummit. Now, what she did was she created a password-protected page, HTML page. You logged in, and it was a grid, like a calendar, and you could right-click on a link to be able to download the MP3 files. So I looked at that model, and I said, from a technology standpoint, there must be a better way to do this. Because what I did is I would register and then have to wait for someone to, you know, do something manually to get me my username and password for me to log in and view the HTML page. So when I hosted my very first telesummit in 2008, I used WordPress. I said, okay, by then I was using WordPress regularly, and I said to myself, you know, WordPress is really easy to post audio files. I was doing a lot of podcasting at the time. I wrote a book on podcasting, so I had used WordPress, the WordPress blog, to deliver my podcasting content, my audio and video content. So I said to myself, okay, fine, I'm going to use WordPress. And I found a plugin that allowed me to create membership levels within WordPress. But Stu, what a miserable experience. Oh, my goodness. It was horrible. Well, and the reason why it was horrible.
I'm smiling and laughing because I personally had the same experience, you know, back in the day, you know, when we were looking to I was looking to turn WordPress into, you know, a protected site, a protected members area. You know, there were a variety of options available, but they just weren't quite there yet. And I'm gathering you had the same experience.
Oh, my goodness. And what made it horrible was that we had to – so we were using one shopping cart at a time. And so it has, you know, everything, you know, affiliates and, you know, every autoresponders, all of it. So, but the problem is that once someone paid for access to my telesummit, and I was charging $200, $400, and $600 for the three different levels, and each level gave people different access. So, and what I wanted to do was if you paid the cheapest option, you could play back the recordings but not download. And then the higher you paid, the more download access you got. However, to manage that, I had to create dozens of different pages. So it'd be like, you know, Speaker X would speak on Monday. And so for the people who paid the cheapest option, they were sent to one page. And then the next level, if you paid for access to download the MP3 files, I had to actually create the same page but hide it in a different spot and deliver that by email to the members. Also, another problem was a customer, and this created a customer service nightmare, is that people would sign up and then have to wait until my virtual assistant was online to see the registration, and then copy their information into the Worship Plus WordPress blog as a user, and then manually have to send out an email with their user or password. Man, oh, it's horrible.
I'm not laughing out of to make fun of it, but I'm smiling and laughing because it was a similar experience on my end. And so, but before we dig deep, I want to kind of stop right there because I love where your mindset was in terms of how to price things and how you were looking to structure the membership level. And perhaps what we'll do is we'll dive deep into, you know, what you've learned about that a little later on. But early on, you were recognizing that a basic or the cheapest membership level, they would have access to the content, but it would be in a streaming format. Am I right?
Yes, exactly. You can play it off of the web page, and that's it.
Gotcha. So, you know, this is a great learning lesson for everybody, and I'm going to kind of recap it here because I want everybody to make note of how the information is being provided. It's the exact same information. It's just being delivered in a different format. And, you know, we talk about this a lot, you know, in our one particular membership site called Wishlist Insider, where we talk about people are willing to pay for convenience. And you recognize that early. You know, there are people that are going to want the cheapest price available. And so, yes, you offer them a cheap alternative. And in this case, it was you can still get access to the information. It's just provided in an inconvenient way, meaning you have to come to the website and you've got to click a button and stay at your computer in order to access it. But if you want the convenience of being able to take that information, download it, listen to it on your iPod or computer or anywhere else, then there is essentially a higher price, and that was your next level, which provided them the recordings. Is that right?
That's right.
And did you say you had a third level at that point as well?
Yeah, I had like the VIP level where you got everything. You got the download recordings, you got access to live sessions over the phone, and you could get the recordings mailed to you on a portable media player. One year I did CDs, but had a very miserable experience. So the second year, what I did when I hosted my title summit is I offered the recordings on a portable media player that looks similar to an iPod, and that was the big kahuna, the big package.
Gotcha.
And so most people, if they had lack of time, what they do is just sign up for the most expensive option, and they wouldn't even call into live calls.
Right.
Which is fine with me because,
yeah,
you know, that's great.
Well, and this is a great learning lesson for everybody because, you know, it's often hard for entrepreneurs to understand the mindset of customers because we often think, well, we wouldn't do that, but we aren't our customer, you know? And this is a great learning lesson, and I thank you for spending some time here, Lisa, because I really hope that this gets cemented in everybody. It's the same information, folks. It's just being provided in a different format. Now, let me ask you real quick. Do you remember what your price points were on those three levels?
Yes. The cheapest option was listen live over the phone, so they got access to the call-in details, and then playback of the audio recording off the web page, which is streaming only, and then access to the online forum. So that's Plan A. Plan A was $197.
Okay.
Plan B, you got everything in Plan A, plus you got a link to download all the session recordings as an MP3 file, plus access to a group strategy session. So that's Plan B, and that was priced at $297.
Okay.
And then Plan C would include everything in Plan A and Plan B, plus you'd get the recordings mailed to you on a portable media player, plus you could get a one-to-one private strategy session with me, the host, and that was $497.
Gotcha.
$197, $297, $497.
And do you know roughly what percentage would take what option?
Yeah. Most people took the least expensive option.
Okay.
So that would be the $197. That would be the majority. So for every 10 people that's at the $197, half of that would sign up for Plan C, the most expensive option. So that would be 5 people. And then half of that, 2.5, around 2 people would sign up for Plan B.
Gotcha.
So it's interesting to see that. I thought it would be, you know, Plan A, of course, you know, everyone would take that. And then Plan B would be the next one, and then Plan C. But it turned out that Plan A was most popular, then Plan C, then Plan B.
Very, very interesting. Now, I appreciate you sharing that, Lisa, because I think it's certainly valuable for people to hear in terms of, number one, how you priced it, what you included, but also, you know, how the sales breakdown usually took place. So we'll talk. I want to talk to you certainly about how you market your events, because I know this is certainly, you know, this whole concept of the Telesummit and certainly providing it in a members area has really taken off for you. But at that particular point, you were doing a lot of manual work, by the sounds of it, trying to piece things together, trying to manually process and so forth. What happened and what made it easier for you?
All right. My virtual assistant discovered Wishlist Member, and she was raving about it. She was, like, going nuts about Wishlist Member because she was the one who had to do all the manual stuff.
Yeah.
So she discovered Wishlist Member and said, Lisa, you got to check this out. And being the type of person I am from a technology background, I'm the type of person that needs to tinker under the hood. And I know my coach keeps telling me, Lisa, you've got to get out of the trenches. You got to be – and I am high level, but, man, Stu, when a new thing comes across my table, I've got to tinker with it.
Right.
So I did that with a membership club. I launched a very short-term membership club, 12 weeks. And we used Wishlist Member, and man, I loved it. Loved nothing. The only manual thing that we had to do was just configure Wishlist Member. That's it. And then everything from that point, it just integrated nicely with PayPal. And what I liked, and for those who use One Shopping Cart, what I loved about Wishlist Member is that I could still use the one single platform to offer a one pay through One Shopping Cart and then payment plans to go through PayPal. However, all the information on the client was still captured in Wishlist Member.
Right.
And that's a huge issue because PayPal, and if you want to offer recurring payments or payment plans through One Shopping Member and you're using PayPal as your gateway, it can't be done.
Right. And that's a really good, important point because, you know, depending on what shopping cart you're using, in this case you're using One Shopping Cart, if you wanted to have recurring payments being processed through PayPal, One Shopping Cart cannot facilitate that. They'll be able to take the first payment, but they won't be able to take recurring payments thereafter. So essentially what you have to do then is you have to integrate directly with PayPal, and essentially you're not going through One Shopping Cart at that point. And as you were saying, what made that easy was Wishlist Member allows you to be able to use multiple shopping platforms even for the exact same membership site.
And I mean, we still had to manually copy the client's information from PayPal into One Shopping Cart. Mm-hmm. But that person who chose the payment plans that went through PayPal so that they can get into Wishlist Member, the nice thing is that I could actually integrate their email through Wishlist Member into an autoresponder in One Shopping Cart. So at least that person didn't miss out on the messages that we wanted to deliver to them.
Right.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does. So, I mean, although you manually had to enter the information back into One Shopping Cart because they were being processed separately through PayPal, you still had an automatic way to be able to capture their email to be able to communicate with them during that process.
And then from a customer service standpoint, that person who chose the recurring payments through PayPal didn't miss out on the time-sensitive information that needed to get to them as an attendee of my virtual event.
Right. So let me talk to you about how you then began to set up these the members area, because it sounds like, you know, you've got multiple sessions that are happening on any one given day for a virtual event. You've got people that are belonging to different levels, so they have, you know, they're able to see different levels of access and be able to view different things. Talk to me about how you typically go about setting up a members area for a Telesummit.
All right. So I call what I do for myself and my clients, I call it a private attendees area. And that allows us to manage attendee information and their access to the content depending on the level that they're paid for. So the very first thing is what we do is for the platforms is we make all pages public and we make posts private. Hmm. So the pages are all public. That would be the about page, which tells people what the virtual event is all about. the schedule, which shows them who's speaking at what time. There's also a speakers page that lists all the speakers. So again, the pages are all public because that's sort of part of the, not sort of, but that is part of the marketing angle. Using WordPress allows us to put keywords throughout the content so that those pages are captured by a search engine and we get traffic that way. And through our marketing channels, email and social media, people go to the page and they're able to read up information on who's speaking, what time does everything take place, frequently asked questions. So pages are all public. The only page which isn't public, well, it is public, but we have a page called Access Live, which would list the call-in details or the webinar information.
Mm-hmm.
So using Wishlist, we're able to make part of the page public, which says, you've got to be a member in order to, or you've got to be an attendee in order to view the content. If you're an attendee, log in. If you're not, click here to find out how you can become one. And, of course, once the person logs in, then that content disappears, and what's revealed on the Access Live page are the call-in details and the webinar information.
Gotcha. So let me kind of recap for everybody what you're doing. You are creating, you're using, obviously, WordPress and Wishlist Member, and then you are creating a variety of pages that are open to the public. And these are basically details about the event. They're used to answer any questions that people may have before registering. They are used to help you market the event. They are used for search engine purposes to certainly because you have keywords related to the speakers' names, their content, etc. And there, those pages are available to the public. Anybody, whether they're registered or not, could go there and be able to see those pages. And then on the private pages, which are only available to your paid registrants, they have information related to each specific call and each specific presentation. Am I right on that?
That's right. That's right. And so what we do is we use posts for private content. So let's just, for example, someone comes, they go to the schedule page. They see at 12 p.m. Stu McLaren's going to talk about how to use how to turn your WordPress blog into a membership website in two easy steps. And so there's a hyperlink that when a person clicks on that, it takes them to a post that now contains Stu's picture, details about the session, the time, what you'll learn. And then right below it, it'll say, attendees log in to get the access details and to access the recording. And if you're not an attendee, then too bad, so sad, cry me a river. No. click on this link to register. When the attendee logs back in, the post now reveals the rest of the content. And underneath, it'll show, if the person paid for Plan A, they'll have an audio flash player where they can stream the audio off the webpage. So that's the recording. If they're not, then, and then if they're Plan B, then, of course, the Plan B content will show up, which will be an audio flash player again, but also include an MP3 download. And as attendees, they'll also see a link to the forums, which is private, using Simple Press forums. And they'll also see if there's any handouts. So we'll also include a link to the PDF download of the handout. So that's why we use posts. Posts help us to, again, gain that search engine traffic because we do reveal some of the description about the session. But the rest of the content, for example, the call-in details, and especially the recordings, are hidden and are only revealed depending on the membership level that the person has when they log in.
So I want to talk to you about I want to give people a visual example of this, because if they're listening to, you know, what we're talking about, there's a number of things that you're doing which I think are really, really attractive for people who are looking to set up a similar type of event. Number one, you've got a lot of information that is available publicly, and one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm looking at one of your sites, and do you mind if I share the URL, Lisa?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So the URL is www.virtualeventboom.com/2010. So once again, that's virtualeventboom.com/2010. And up in the top right-hand corner, you'll actually see a link that is for attendees and the speaker login. And when you go there, this is where you'll actually see all of what Lisa is referring to as far as the public pages and as well as the private pages. And what's really interesting is when you click on the schedule, as Lisa was outlining, you'll see a list of all the presentations that will be taking place along with who will be delivering those presentations. And you can click on each of them, and you'll see a summary of what it is you're going to learn during that presentation. But on that particular post, there are certain areas of that post which are protected using the wishlist member private tags. So in this situation, if you click on one of the presentations, you'll see, you know, a summary of what you're going to learn. You'll also then see instructions on how you can participate in the discussion that's happening on certainly Twitter. And then you'll actually see links to where you can participate in the discussion that's happening in the actual forums of that particular site. And even more is there you'll see the private tags that is protecting the content, the paid-for content for each particular plan. So if you belong to Plan A, you'll then see the streaming play button so that you can listen to that particular presentation. If you're part of Plan B, you're going to see, you know, the streaming and probably the MP3 download and so forth and so forth. And so what happens is by using the private tags, you're able to use the exact same post and yet protect content for different levels depending on what they've paid for. And if they belong to Plan A, they're going to see the content that is available for Plan A, all on the same post. If they belong to Plan B, they're going to see the content that's available just for Plan B, again, all on the same post, and so on and so on. So back to you, Lisa. This must have saved you a lot of time because now instead of creating multiple pages, you're creating one and using the private tags to therefore deliver the protected content for each level.
Oh, my goodness. It was a dream come true. Dream come true. And certainly using SimplePress forms, the very first year I did this, I was using BBPress because that was the only thing I knew at the time. And that was also a horrible solution because BBPress, their database isn't shared with the WordPress database. So then even if you logged into WordPress to access the content for the sessions, you had to still log in separately into BBPress in order to access the form. So that was a poor solution. That's why SimplePress form is awesome.
Yeah, so let's talk about that because a lot of people don't realize what an important distinction that is and why that is so important when it comes to running a membership site. Because essentially, as you said, the BBPress, the way it's structured, it uses a different database for its users. And so they have to create a different username and a different password. And what you're saying is when you were originally using that, they would log in to Wishlist Member to get access to all the content. But then when they wanted to access the forum, they would have to log in again because they are essentially logging into BBPress. Am I right?
Yeah, and that created a customer service nightmare because now we had to kind of walk them through, you know, yeah, you're logged in, but sorry, but you have to log in again. And, you know, and that's the idea is, you know, as I look at each virtual event I did, each telethon I did, the goal is to make sure that I'm not wasting money with my support team answering support stuff that could be solved by just using the right plugins.
Right. And so the recommended solution that you mentioned and that we recommend and that we use as well is a forum plugin called SimplePress. And the primary reason we recommend it is not only is it a great plugin and provides a great forum, but the really important part to that is that it uses the exact same user database that WordPress does and Wishlist Member does. So therefore, your members can have one username and password, and when they log in, they are automatically logged in to not only Wishlist Member, but also SimplePress as well. And even more, what gets exciting about that with Wishlist Member and SimplePress is that you can drill down the integration even farther so that you could have some areas of a forum only open to certain levels, let's say people who belong to Plan A, and you could have other areas of the forum only available to members who belong to Plan B. So you can really drill down even further and further. And so it is a great a pairing or a matchup, and I'm glad to hear you talk about it, Lisa, because I'm curious as to how that marriage, if you will, of the two solutions helped in terms of reducing your support load.
So many things. The first year, and it was so important for me to use a forum that integrated nicely, one, to lessen the customer support tickets, but two, to be able to own that community, because after the virtual event's over, I've built this wonderful platform, and to now abandon the community and the content after the virtual event is over would be a huge mistake, and that's a huge mistake that many people who run telesummits and virtual summits, that's what they do. After it's over, it's like, okay, I'm going to burn this to CV and mail it out, and that's it. But now you have this community that you've built. And the first year I did my telesummit, I made the mistake of using a Facebook group to manage my community, because BB Press was working so horribly. But I'd have to remember, oh, this person wants to friend me because it was a private group, and you can only join if you're my friend. So then they'd send me a friend request, and then I'd forget, and then weeks would go by, and then they're like, oh, I didn't get access. And, you know, and, oh, I want my money back because I didn't get access, even though they got access to all the content.
Right.
But, you know, it was, and plus, not owning my data is troublesome. You know, Facebook, whatever hissy fit they're on that day, will determine whether or not you can log in. You know, I've heard horror stories of people not being able to access their Facebook profile or even log in because of some innocent thing that they did and it was considered spam and then Facebook blocked them out. So that was another huge consideration in making sure that I found a bulletin board, a forum that could integrate nicely with WordPress, Wishlist, and provide a seamless integration for attendees.
Lisa, I love what you're saying because I think it is really, really important, as you said, for all business owners who are building any type of membership site or online community, in that you always maintain control over that particular community. And as you said, when you use third-party solutions that are hosted elsewhere, you run the risk of therefore being vulnerable to any decisions that that company makes that point forward. So, for example, you mentioned a lot of horror stories with Facebook. I know similar horror stories with another platform called Ning. It was a free solution. Many people built all kinds of thriving communities, and all of a sudden, Ning made the decision that they wanted to change the way that they structured their pricing model. And so you had all these communities now in disarray, and it was very frustrating for those people who began those communities because they didn't have control. So it really is important, if you're building a community or a membership site, you maintain control, and certainly Wishlist Member and certainly Simple Press combined together will help give you that control, will help give you that community that you're looking for. But again, you have control over it. You're the decision maker, so nobody can press pause and stop it at any given time.
Beautiful. So I wanted to add one more thing about Simple Press Forum in terms of something that you mentioned. I was able to create, or one of the options I offered to those who paid the higher fees to access my virtual event was a private group session called How to Price, Position, and Package Your Virtual Event. So what my team did is we created a new forum topic in Simple Press Forum called the Pricing Call or something like that. And then we were able to look at who registered for Plan B and C and then add those individuals to that forum so that anyone who was not Plan B or C could not see that forum topic. Mm-hmm. So I felt free to, you know, submit all the information, the call-in details, the handout to that individual forum, knowing that only Plan B and C people would be able to see it.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. You're just a great example of somebody, Lisa, who has taken the features and all of the elements of Wishlist Member, realized how they integrate with a variety of other solutions, including, you know, some of the payment solutions, but also we're talking here about Simple Press, and really use them to provide a seamless experience for the people who are paying you for those virtual events. And that ultimately is what it's all about, because we as business owners want to make our memberships as seamless as possible so that the members who are joining are not worried about accessing material. That becomes very easy. It's about delivering the content, and the focus, therefore, is on the content and not, you know, getting hung up on any little thing, as you said, that could end up being a refund request just simply because they got frustrated.
Mm-hmm. And that's usually the number one refund request, is when someone cannot access your content. You can have the best content in the world, the best speakers in the world, but if someone cannot access that content, they will immediately contact you by email or contact you through your support desk asking for a refund. That is always the number one refund request that I would get with my virtual events.
Very, very interesting. So let me talk to you. Let's dig a little further. You basically, quick recap, you have pages that are available to the public, whether they're registered or not, that gives information about the event, the speakers, what presentations. But then the actual content itself is protected within posts, and that is for paid members only. And with that, you have different levels of paying members. The basic is that they get access to the live information as well as the streaming of those recordings. The next level gets access to the live, the stream, the MP3 recordings, plus a group strategy session. And then the next level, the highest level, they get access to live recordings, the group strategy sessions, a one-on-one session, as well as, you know, you said in the earlier days you were actually sending out portable media players that contained all the recordings as well. Are you still following that same formula nowadays?
Yeah, it's typical. It's a typical formula that my clients and I all follow. There is one exception, and this is, it's an interesting model. One of my clients shared with me that that her audience is used to getting content for free, and so she's doing a telesummit right now, 8 speakers. It's too early for numbers, but what we've done is we've offered access to live sessions over the phone for free. So you sign up, call in, you sign up, you get a call-in number, and then you just call in, you listen to all the sessions for free over the phone. And if you want the recordings, then you have to pay for that. And it would be the same model as the plan A, B, and C that I described. So for $97, you get the recording. You can only stream it off the web page. Plan B is download MP3, and then plan C would be get them on CD. So it's an interesting model because I really preach not giving away your content. Your telesummit is your product, mm-hmm. and you should always charge for that. But I'm watching this model, and I'm you know, I don't know, maybe in a few weeks I can report on the metrics, but for now it's interesting to watch.
But it still holds the same principles. You're providing the information, it's available for free, but it's inconvenient. It's provided in an inconvenient format. If they want the convenience of being able to access that information at whatever time they want to be able to download it, etc., then they pay for that convenience in the form of a higher membership level.
And her audience is lawyers, so as you can imagine, lawyers don't have a lot of time on their hands. So for them to sit on the phone for 4 hours, 2 days in a row, you know, that means they're losing money. So the chances of those upgrading from free to one of the paid packages is going to be quite high.
Right. And you know what? From a customer standpoint, the rationale behind that is very easy to understand. It's, you know, if you're looking for a good deal, then you know, you can get a good deal and access the information for free by dialing in live and listening to it, as you said, being on that phone for that 4-hour period. But if you want the convenience of being able to access it afterwards, you have to pay for that. Awesome. Okay, so let's talk about what other tips and tricks would you have for people who are looking to structure or set up a membership site for the purposes of delivering, you know, a virtual event as you are here?
Yeah, I think the primary, the primary thing that I want everyone to take away with them is that even though a virtual event is short-term, it has a specific start and end date, that a virtual event should fit into your longer marketing strategy, your you know, the long-term. So, for example, for a couple of my clients who have fit a telesummit into their long-term marketing strategy, understand that what they're doing with their telesummit in using WordPress and Wishlist is that they're building a community that they can tap into for 11 months in that year, so for the long term, so that they can earn more money off an audience that have already demonstrated that they're willing to spend money with that person. So, for example, one of my clients has turned her platform into a continuing mastermind area. So for attendees, what she's done is she's allowed them to continue to access the content and allow them to access the forums, but she's created additional pages and additional forums that are hidden from the attendees of her virtual summit in order to encourage them that if you want, you know, monthly mastermind sessions with me in a group setting, please sign up here. And once they sign up, they get access to additional pages.
Gotcha.
So that's one thing she's doing. My client who's targeting the lawyers is actually going to kill her community on the 30th, 30 days after the session ends. But it doesn't mean that even though she's killing the community through her wishlist WordPress combination, it doesn't mean that she won't have an ability to tap into in the long term. And so she has a group strategy session that's coming up where she's going to upsell them to a $2,000 package, and then from there they're going to enter into her marketing funnel.
Gotcha. So for everybody listening, what you're doing there then, for those clients of yours that are looking to continue that community aspect to their site, is you're creating another membership level, and those people, when they purchase the ongoing access to not only the content, which everybody gets, but the access to the extended mastermind sessions, essentially that's another membership level, and therefore there are other areas within your site that are protected just for that level. Am I right?
Exactly.
Gotcha. So let's talk to you a little bit about that. You talk a lot about the need to keep the community going once it's started.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that so important?
Oh, man. It's primarily because when you have a community that you can tap into that have already demonstrated that they're willing to spend money with you, it makes it so much super easy to sell additional things to. For example, I had a workshop coming up, and unfortunately my community was a bit fractured because over the past 3 years I've gone from podcasting to social media and now to virtual events. And the social media thing wasn't that great for me, and in any case, in my database there's three different audiences. Now, the podcasting and virtual events audiences in my database are one and the same because a podcast can be considered a virtual event. But the problem is that because I've changed my focus so many times over the last 3 years, it was so difficult to fill my workshop. Really difficult. Now, had I been a little bit smarter, then I would have used my virtual event boom to really engage that community a lot earlier so that the workshop would have been easier to fill. Now, compare that to someone like one of my other clients who has a community. He targets recruiting firm owners, so those who own a recruitment firm. So not just recruiters, but those who own recruitment firms. And in his database is 2,000 people. But what makes his example so powerful is that because his target is so niched, he was able to fill his he was able to surpass some of his goals with his virtual event that he held back in March and be able to attract a new audience. So now he has about 500 people he can tap into who weren't in his database before for future products and services. And he has a million-dollar company, so he's doing very well. So that's why, to me, that's the primary reason why building a community using a telesummit and virtual event and combining that with WordPress wishlist so key, because now everything becomes so effortless. It's almost like, Stu, that you're not selling. What you're doing is you're inviting people to continue their experience with you.
I love that. You're not selling. You're inviting them to continue their experience with you. Let me ask you now, Lisa, as you've had so much experience, you know, not only setting up these types of membership sites for yourself, but for clients as well, are there any other elements of Wishlist Member that you think others should really know about and utilize that perhaps are going kind of under the radar, that people don't really aren't really understanding how to utilize to its full impact?
Yeah, I know for me, one of the big time savers is definitely using the broadcast system and being able to send out customized messages depending on the membership level. One of the things so that's one of the things I encourage you to do, that even if you've got one shopping cart or AWeber, I just love the email feature within Wishlist and love the upgrades you guys did where there's an archive of broadcasts I could tap into.
Mm-hmm.
But the second thing that I really like is being able to redirect people to a specific, now, the specific login and logout pages. And the way we use it is once the person logs in, the attendee logs in, they get their own dashboard, which you guys encourage us to do. And so on that dashboard, I provide regular updates on what's happening with the virtual event, the virtual summit. And I customize a dashboard. Actually, I include content on that dashboard depending on the person's membership level. Now, one of the things that was overlooked until recently is the logout page. And depending on their membership, on that logout page, we actually put the upgrade options.
Hmm.
And so if they're a Plan A person, when they log out, they get a page that says, hey, by the way, don't forget, if you want to be able to, your membership includes X, X, and X. However, don't forget that if you want to download the MP3 recording so you can listen to it over and over and over and over, whenever, however, you know, then upgrade here. And we provide a nice little link. So up until recently, that page was overlooked, didn't use it.
Right.
But now that I want to, you know, now that the upgrade options are available and provide additional income, we use that as an upsell opportunity.
And it's a great page to do that, because at that point those people are logging out of the membership site at that particular point, and it's a great opportunity to remind them of the additional benefits they can get through the, you know, upper levels, if you will. And so for everybody listening, if you're wanting to use that feature, that's in the Membership Levels tab, and you'll see that you can select specific pages for the login redirect as well as the logout redirect for each level. And as you mentioned, Lisa, this was a feature that was just recently added in terms of the logout redirect. And as you're mentioning, which I think is a brilliant application of it, using it as a way to remind them of the other levels that they could be upgrading to.
Now, Sue, I know that some people might be asking, okay, what themes are Lisa using? So I just want to mention them quickly.
Mm-hmm.
For my clients who want a very long sales page, as you saw at Virtual Event Boom, I use Thesis as the theme. It's a premium theme. I use nothing but premium themes because they work better. So Thesis. Now, if you were to go to one of my client sites, which is fromstafftopartnersummit.com, again, that URL is fromstafftopartnersummit.com, they're using the optimized theme. Her audience is not used to the long sales pages. They're used to very short pages of content, sort of like a conference. So it's very important to her that we did not use the long sales page. So what we did is we used a theme called Optimize to be able to create what looks like a conference type of website that her audience would be used to. And that worked out very nicely, helped her earn five figures from her virtual summit. So that's from staff2partnersummit.com. So you can see the two different varieties, two different flavors.
And what I like about what you just said there, Lisa, is that not all themes are going to be right for all audiences. And it's important to understand, you know, what your audience is used to and certainly what is going to be most attractive to them. And because of that, you're going to want to then style your sites accordingly.
Exactly.
Very, very cool, Lisa. Well, I really want to thank you for your time here. You shared a ton of great information. Where can people find out more about you and how can they learn from you?
They can go to virtualeventsuccess.com, virtualeventsuccess.com, and there I dole out advice on virtual events and telesummits. So head there, and you can find me and certainly you have any more questions, you can definitely ask me through that blog site.
Awesome. Well, Lisa, I know you're out of Toronto, so we're going to have to get together soon because I'm not too far from you. So we'll have to connect. But in the meantime, I want to thank you definitely for your time here. Tons of great information shared. I'm just going to give everybody a quick recap of some of the things we talked about. I'm going to hand it over to you in the end for some final thoughts. So let's quickly recap what we've talked to Lisa about today. Number one, we talk about her background and how it led to the point now where she is creating membership sites for to be able to facilitate virtual events. But it didn't always start off that way. Lisa was working for a pretty big company, and she was delivering all kinds of training. And because of cutbacks, they said, listen, we want to continue delivering this training, but we want to cut as much cost out of it as possible, particularly the travel and certainly the cost of delivering that training. That's what led Lisa to begin exploring how to deliver training in a virtual format. And ultimately, that led to becoming an expert in delivering training through teleseminars and virtual mediums like webinars. And so as that company continued to cut back, unfortunately, but fortunately, that led to Lisa being let go. But it was the beginning of a whole new era for Lisa, where she started her own business, and she still loved the idea of working from home. She still loved the idea of being able to use the teleseminars as a medium to provide and sell information. So she began hosting monthly interview experts. She began selling them individually, but it was very clunky at that point, and she wasn't having the same type of success as she really wanted to and knew that she was capable of. The real jump for her began when she began delivering telesummits, where it is a series or a group of expert interviews all geared around a shared topic or subject matter delivered during a shortened period of time. She hosted her first telesummit in 2008, and as she did that, wanted to use WordPress to help deliver that content. But again, there just wasn't a solution that made it easy for her until her virtual assistant suggested Wishlist Member, and I'm so thankful that she did. After using Wishlist Member, the process became easier because she was able to have multiple membership levels. She was able to protect the content accordingly. It made it easier in terms of cutting down the workload because she only had to create one page for each of the levels, and she'd be able to deliver protected content on each of them accordingly. And so after exploring with the telesummit concept, she began using Wishlist Member, the whole process became easier and certainly more profitable. One of the big lessons for everybody listening here today was to really pay close attention to how Lisa has priced her telesummits. She always has a cheaper alternative or a cheaper option where she provides live call-in information where those people can dial in, listen to the expert interviews live, and they can also access it by streaming on the website. So they have to click on the play button on their website and listen to it from their computer. It is available, but it's inconvenient, but it's still an option. And as Lisa said, the majority of people do still select that option. But then there's a higher level where the people have the convenience of being able to get everything in the base package, but have the convenience of being able to download the recordings, to be able to listen to them at any point in time that they want. And there are always going to be a percentage of people that are willing to pay for that convenience. And as Lisa mentioned throughout the call, there are always a percentage of people that are willing to pay for that. But then she has the highest package. We talked about it here today. It's called the VIP package, where they get all of the live information, they get the streaming, they get the recordings, they also get group strategy sessions and one-on-one sessions, and all of that information that's recorded is packaged and bundled on a portable media player that is then sent to those people. And as Lisa was saying, there is always a percentage of people that take that package as well, and it's allowed her to really dramatically grow the amount of that she is able to sell each of those packages for. The key thing here is that she's using Wishlist Member to create a private attendees area. This is a place where the paid registrants can get all the information for all of the interviews and the recordings, and also download that content that's related to each presentation. She does this by making all of the pages public. Now, these pages are used for specific purposes. They give all the information about the event, the schedule, the speakers, but its primary purpose is obviously to inform people about the event, educate them on who is speaking, what they'll be talking about, but yet there is no content on those pages that is available if you are not a paying member. So all pages are made public, but it's the posts that are made private. The posts are what contains the paid for content, the recordings, the transcripts, etc., etc. And so she does that again by making all the pages public, all the posts are private. And one of the other things that Lisa talked about was the importance of integrating a forum and really developing that community. She does that now by using the plugin called SimplePress. The main reason is because it integrates seamlessly with Wishlist Member and obviously WordPress, so that your members can have one username and login, and as soon as they log in, they're able to access the appropriate areas within the forum as well. And she said, speaking of the communities, too many people, when they run these one-time events, just let the community die. They let it go. This is a big mistake, Lisa said, because you want to continue to keep that community going. You want to ask yourself, how can this telesummit fit into your long-term marketing plans? Turn your members area into an ongoing mastermind. That was a great example that Lisa shared of one of her clients doing. The other thing that she talked about as far as being important for using Wishlist Member with WordPress is that you are able to maintain control over your community. You're not subject to any third-party company or organization that can then make decisions that could jeopardize the health of your community. So you always want to maintain control, and certainly Wishlist Member, WordPress, and SimplePress will help you do that. The other thing that I love that Lisa talked about was the rationale behind wanting to keep that community going. She said, not only is it going to help you generate additional revenue, she said, but it's going to help you develop a stronger relationship with those people. They want to continue their experience with you. That was a great line that Lisa shared. And she said, ultimately, because of that, they will look and want to invest more and more with you long term. Some of the features that Lisa talked about she uses on a regular basis of Wishlist Member that certainly sometimes go underlooked is the broadcast feature to be able to send specialized messages to the members who belong to specific levels. The other area or features that she likes using are both the login and now the logout redirects, which allows her to customize messages pertaining to each specific level. She used the example of how she uses it with certain levels. When they log out, she then has a message reminding them of the value that they get in their membership, but also the additional value that they would get if they would upgrade to a higher level. As far as themes that she likes using, she said with clients and customers that want to use a longer sales letter type format, she uses the thesis theme. And for customers looking to use a shorter, more web 2.0 type of look and feel, she uses the optimize theme. To find out more about Lisa and the various sites that we talked about here today, certainly visit www.virtualeventboom.com/2010. Again, that's virtualeventboom.com/2010. You can also see and find out more information about Lisa by going to virtualeventsuccess.com. Lisa, this has been a great interview. I really appreciate you and all that you've shared. Do you have any final thoughts for people listening who are thinking about setting up their own membership sites or perhaps thinking about setting up their own virtual events?
And it's this. A good technical solution is one your users can't see. And what I mean by that is simply that if you choose the right tools, then you provide your users, your clients, your customers with a seamless experience. And if the only thing they have to complain about is the fact that the speaker spoke too quickly, then you know you've picked the right tools for your solution. So just remember that Wishlist is a great investment, Certainly it has been for me. I mean, with the small investment I've made and the amount of money I've helped my clients and myself make has been, you know, it's been a great return on investment. And based on all the struggles I've gone through, choosing WordPress and Wishlist to manage my virtual events has been the best thing that I could have done. And at the end of the day, none of my users have ever complained about the technology.
Well, I love it, and I certainly appreciate your kind words, Lisa, and we thank you very, very much for your time here today, and I look forward to sharing this interview with certainly all of our customers and potential customers from this point forward. So thank you so much, Lisa.
Thanks, Stu.
For more information on how you, too, can build your own membership site using WordPress, visit www.wishlistmember.com. There you'll find the solution that thousands of people around the world are now using to quickly and easily create and manage their very own membership site. If you like WordPress, then you'll love Wishlist Member, and with our world-class support, tutorials, and help guides, your site will be up faster than you ever imagined. By the way, when you do get your site up, let us know because we love hearing about our successful customers. Until next time, from our entire team at Wishlist Products, we wish you all the best and look forward to working with you soon. Take care.